Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
This episode is sponsored by R.W. Knudsen Organic Just Tart Cherry Juice, a welcome addition to anyone's sleep routine. Pace Case, if you know me, and you do, you know that I'm working all hours of the day, all hours of the night. So the sleep that I do get has to be very good sleep, and I'm always looking for ways to up my sleep routine. Sometimes I'll read a book to go to sleep. Sometimes
The Bachelor?
That book keeps me very awake. It's very engaging. That never puts me to sleep. I will sometimes just put down my cell phone after a long day of looking at a screen. It's nice to get some time away from the screen. I also will incorporate some R.W. Knudsen Organic Just Tart Cherry Juice. It truly makes you go to sleep a little easier. It's the thing you need to help you drift off into the dreamland.
As more and more people are looking to prioritize sleep, Organic Just Tart Cherry is having a moment thanks to Tart Cherry's potential sleep-related benefits and potential to aid in muscle recovery when you get those gains like clues. We're seeing this in the viral Sleepy Girl Mocktail trend on social media. R.W. Knudsen has a whole lineup of natural juices with zero added sugar, so you can feel good about adding them to your wellness routine. It's all about celebrating those daily wins. Organic Just Tart Cherry Juice is made from tart cherries, which may help you get a better night's sleep because they have natural melatonin.
R.W. Knudsen crushes only 100% real ingredients, so you can crush everything you do. Pick up a bottle at your local grocery store today.
It's the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses. This is the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses.
I'm just a dude who loves family, football, and frozen pizza. This week was a big, fun week, I think. I saw some real bad bitch energy, and I'm feeling like a bad bitch right now.
It would have been really easy to be like, I'm happy for you. Yes.
Have you ever considered just literally shutting the up?
Comments about social media, like, are going to rub people the wrong way. Like, this isn't the time or the place to be talking about how many followers you're going to have after you leave the show. Like, our focus needs to just be on Zach.
Well, I know the news about Zach, that caught a lot of you off guard. Zach's in his room, he's isolating, and he's missing all of you like crazy. The good news, though, is Zach's feeling good enough to do something that we've never done in Bachelor history, a virtual cocktail party.
We can have emotions and feelings without expressing them, like, to intentionally hurt the other person's feelings. So I'm not doing anything.
If it hurts your feelings, like, if the shoe fits, lace that bitch up.
I'm so happy for you.
Thank you.
I am happy for you, Kathy.
Thank you.
This is exciting.
I'm obviously happy for you. I'm just sad.
When's my sister's birthday? If you don't know somebody's birthday, how do you really know a person? Like, do you know my sister's middle name?
The truth is, as a franchise, we've done a very poor job in the past of addressing serious topics head on. And we're not going to miss that opportunity here tonight.
I've essentially, like, gone against my word. And I have, like, fears with, like, how Katie would feel, how would Ariel feel, how would all the women feel. And I just feel like a guilt about the whole week now, because it's not with Gabby, but like a guilt of, you know, I said one thing and I did another.
But it came from a good place.
Welcome to Game of Roses. This is Pace Case.
This is Bachelor Clues, and today is Tuesday. Usually, we would be having a recap of our beloved game, but as you know, we are in the off season. And the first week of every off season, we like to look back on the season that just concluded and go through our top 10 takeaways from that season. Every season that has ever happened in the history of our beloved game, Bachelor, Bachelorette, Bachelor in Paradise, Bachelor Winter Games, Bachelor Pad, Love is Blind. I almost said Love is Blind, but listen to your heart. Not Love is Blind. But all of these Bachelor media projects, they have all contributed to the history of the game. They have all changed the game, even in subtle ways, but they all lend something to the rich legacy of this tapestry that is the Bachelor world, and season 27 is no different. So we are today going to go through the top 10 things that have happened this season that we think are going to have a lasting impact, or maybe that this season will be known for. So shall we begin this, Pace Case?
Let's go. I'm a fucking weirdo.
the weirdo didn't make our list. I'm going to put that in the honorable mentions. This was the first season with a fucking weirdo.
First weirdo bachelor. Yeah. Not until, you know, season 27. It's a long time.
I would argue that was probably season 7's Charlie O'Connell. He was a legit weirdo bachelor, in my opinion. But we're going to begin here. Our list at number 10, and we're going to count it down. And then at the end of this episode...
Not Gin-Gin.
Gin-Gin was a weirdo? Yeah, I'll give Gin-Gin weirdo credit.
First Dolphin Bachelor.
That's true. God, I'll never forget his laugh. I'll never forget it.
This is the season 4 Bachelor, Bob Guinea.
And now he's a co-host of Bachelor OG.
And he had the most sex.
Supposedly.
That we know of.
He's on record as having said that, but I mean, I don't know.
But he's a weirdo, so who knows?
There's a lot of rumors about those first seasons that are, let's just say things were a little looser back then. You definitely didn't have fantasy suites where Zach Shawcross was like, I'm not going to have sex at all. That was not happening in the first seasons. At any rate, we're going to get to our top 10. Then once we get to the last item on our list, we are going to give out our season-long awards. We're talking about creatures of the season. We're talking about Jorge Moreno bystanders of the season, errors of the season, face plays of the season, plays of the season, MVP of the season. And we also got a new item on this list per Pace Case's request. Please, unveil your new award.
You know... We'll see if this award lasts season to season, but I had one and I was like, what would be the award for this? Minutia of the season.
All right. I can't wait to hear yours.
Clues and I go on tangents and are talking about random stupid shit from time to time. When we think we're at a Wendy's, we think we're not at a Wendy's and then we are. So minutia of the season. is our new award.
All right. I can't wait to get to them. Let's begin our top 10 list. Here we go. Number 10 on the list of most important takeaways from historic Bachelor season 27 starring Zachary Shallcrank. No, Shacklecross, a.k.a. Shallcross. Was
Shallcrank.
Shallcrank. Number 10 was the tier play this season. I don't know if we have ever seen tier play quite like this in any season. We have notable tier players from throughout history. Ashley Iaconetti was kind of held up in her season, season 19, that was Chris Soule's Bachelor season, as kind of the most prolific crier because she would cry constantly and in a very hilarious way. The torch then got passed from her to Kelsey Weir in season 24, literally, when...
via a giant champagne bottle.
Yeah, fucking beautiful, brilliant moment. But here this season... We saw virtually every player cry almost at all times. Somebody else would get named on a one-on-one date, immediate tears. Somebody else would get a group date rose, immediate tears. We saw Charity crying, I think, in every episode that she was in until she got eliminated.
It's also like Charity's cry and Gabby's cry specifically were these gorgeous, like, scene-stealing cries that were like a painting in themselves. And, you know, we're in that professional level, folks. If you can't cry on command, what you even doing here? Get out. You're going to look like a 4TWR loser.
Yeah, you have to be able to cry again at virtually any moment. But to your point as well, it was the presentation of the tear play from Gabby and Charity that was on this other level. These are like, you know, movie level tear plays when you see how it's presented. I'm reminded of a movie, an old movie called Dangerous Liaisons. Do you remember this movie from the 80s? It's based on a book of the same name, a very famous book. It's about a kind of, do you remember God, what was that?
No.
There was a Ryan Phillippe movie that was made based on it as well. Dangerous somethings about these teens and love triangles and stuff. The book is a series of letters.
Oh, that movie I did see.
Yeah. Do you know what I'm talking about? What is the name of that fucking movie? It's going to haunt me. At any rate, the book is a famous piece of classic literature.
No, I got it. Because I looked it up recently. Reese Witherspoon kiss movie.
Yes, that's the one.
It's...
Cruel Intentions, it was called. I remember.
Cruel Intentions, yes.
That was that movie, but there was another movie that was based on this same book that was more true to the book, that took place in France around the time the book was written, et cetera, et cetera. It had John Malkovich in it.
Eloise?
No, it's called Dangerous Liaisons.
Oh.
The same title of the book. John Malkovich was in it. I believe Keanu Reeves was in it. And Glenn Close was definitely in it. She played the Sarah Michelle Gellar character in Cruel Intentions. And the final shot of this movie has Glenn Close sitting in like an opera box. And everybody's all like done up crazy costumes and all this kind of shit. And everybody in this opera house turns to her and is kind of laughing at her because she gets exposed for having been the mastermind of this weird manipulation plot. And the shot is just this slow push into Glenn Close's face. She doesn't fucking blink. A single tear rolls down her face. Oscar. She got the Oscar that year for it. We are now seeing that level of tear play in our beloved game. That type of a performance where it is not just crying in response to some emotional abuse they are suffering. It is presented in this filmic way, in this beautiful Oscar-worthy way. Are you now doing it, Pace Case? Are you trying to do it? No, Pace Case has just frozen. Lizzie's back after some technical difficulties. Her Zoom froze, and I thought she was pulling a Glenn Close on me. I thought she was going to sit there, open-eyed, not blinking, and maybe try to produce some tear play herself, but that was not the case. Just a power outage, and her Zoom froze. All right, let's move on.
I've never tried to cry on purpose, but I bet I could.
Interesting. Maybe you should attempt that. Not See right if you now. Can go into our beloved game. But let's move on to the number 9 item on our list. Number 9 is the first bachelor to be engaged since Pilot Pete in this franchise. So we are, of course, talking about Pilot Pete's failed engagement to Hannah Ann Sluss at the end of that season. She gave back the ring, but nonetheless accepted it. So that does count in our beloved game. And then we had after that Clayton Eckers' disastrous finale. And we had after that Matt James' disastrous finale, although he is now together with Rachel Kirkconnell still, and their relationship does seem to be going strong. Mm-hmm. This is the first time on camera.
I consider her and Susie ring winners.
Okay.
Because they got the final roses.
They didn't. Susie rejected it.
They were offered.
The offer doesn't count if you don't accept.
No, yes, it does. Do you consider the two finalists not ring winners on Brad Womack's season?
Correct. They're last women standing. Finalists.
Oh, wait. No, he didn't offer it, though. But I'm just saying we haven't seen a rejected final rose except for that one.
Yeah, Susie Evans.
And I consider it a ring win.
I consider it...
The ring was presented.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I don't consider it a ring win. Nonetheless, this season... We saw Zach Shawcross propose to Katie Bigger, and it was accepted. Now, this is something the producer scripted. They had to have this season end in an engagement. They were going to fucking make sure that was going to happen. And Shawcross obliged, Katie Bigger obliged. And now we're living in this world where they are engaged, making the rounds on all the podcasts, talking about how happy they are, how great this is. I still give it 6 months. I think it will decompose. Just statistically speaking, I'm going to make that prediction every time and be right 99% of the time.
Hey, they live in the same city, so maybe they've got a head start on others.
that is definitely a good thing. And we're going to be talking about same city mechanics next week when we talk about the rebrand. But let's move on to our number 8 item on this list. It is America's Fimpros, or as we have it on this list, the failed idea that was America's Fimp. They gave this...
terrible.
I mean, it was just a dumb idea from the beginning. Whoever had it, bad at job, shouldn't be working there anymore, in my opinion. Maybe it was Fleiss. We're going to get to him a little bit later on this list.
Very bad at job.
Very bad at job indeed. So if the idea is that with America's Fimp was 5 players get to come out, meet Zach Shawcross at the end of the last season of Bachelorette, and it's the little live event where the Bachelor gets to meet a couple of players first. So it's going to happen in that. They're going to give a rose to somebody in that initial meeting, and that rose will carry through, at least in game mechanics, to night one. That player will be safe. Mm-hmm. How do they get the rose? America votes on Twitter with hashtags. What? Not only is this virtually impossible to tally, people in the pit have tallied it, and Brianna didn't win. Christina Mandrell did.
Ooh, I forgot about that. Yeah, it's a fake Twitter election. We already knew that.
Yeah. And all it really did was serve to make Brianna a target in the house immediately. Nobody believed it was real. Zach didn't give a shit about it. It's like, if this is really about him finding connections and stuff, why, even in the conceit of the game, like, he doesn't give out the actual first impression rose either. The producers choose that. But the conceit of this is that he didn't choose it. They're even telling us in the, again, the mechanics of how America's Fimp works is we choose the person for him. Well, how does that help him find a relationship?
It's also denigrating the real Fimp.
Absolutely. This was a terrible idea, executed poorly. I hope they never do it again. But I will say this. I will give them props for this element of it. They're attempting to engage with social media by doing this. They're saying tweet about it. They chose the wrong social media platform. It shouldn't have been Twitter.
I mean, should have been TikTok.
Absolutely. Should have been TikTok. Whoever gets the most comments, the most likes, whatever, is going to get the fucking Fimp.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, terribly done. Some small props for the attempt, but terribly done. Please never do this again. Moving on.
Number 7. Most important takeaway from Bachelor Season 27 is the event that ruined my April. Bachelor Live on Stage was canceled. We bought VIP tickets, front row. We were going to fly and book ourselves hotels in Scottsdale, Arizona. We got lodging, we got flights. And now they just emailed us that it's canceled. Get your refunds this way.
No explanations. And the cancellation email was a picture of Becca Kufrin, Andrew Spencer, and Rodney Matthews just smiling at you holding roses. Canceled!
Canceled.
This isn't just about the cancellation, in my opinion, either. It is about a broader problem, or at least there's a broader impact of this. There are a lot of layoffs right now going on at ABC and across all network television.
A lot of companies.
I don't know if the people who are in charge of Bachelor Live on Stage were among these layoffs at ABC or Disney or whatever entity is putting this on. I'm not even sure who's producing it. It may be NZK. I don't know. But I don't know if this was because of those layoffs, but I tend to think that even with the layoffs, if they had pre-sold enough tickets to this, that it was going to make them any amount of money, they would not have canceled it.
Yeah.
So I think this is an indicator of a bigger problem, which is there is not enough interest in the show anymore from the audience watching it to want to fly to Arizona for a weekend and see this thing.
However, the amount of people that were watching the show that saw this show advertised were zero because they didn't advertise it on the actual show. So who knows?
Yeah, the marketing for it was bad. And, you know, we bought our tickets very early. We know Dark Seeker was kind of checking on a weekly basis to see how many other tickets for the various weeks had been sold. And she said the week that we were there was by far the biggest.
Good at job.
Yeah, she's good at job. By far that week had the most tickets sold. But even that week wasn't even half full. So if that was the best week or best weekend, then the other ones were less than half full. They're just doing a very bad job at marketing it. I can only assume they were going to do an equally bad job at putting it together as they did the Bachelor Live on Stage that Grace Ann and I went to last year. It just is, to me, this is an indication that the company making this show doesn't understand or care about the audience at all. And if you don't have a happy audience watching your show...
What do you mean? We got to vote for Brianna as our FIMPROS recipient. We got to give her a immunity idol for night one.
Listen, I think that that's part of this too. It shows how I think, I don't know if naive is the right word or oblivious. They just don't understand how the audience is interacting with the show. The product Bachelor Live on Stage isn't even a good product. Nobody really wants to go and see like people pulled out of the audience to fake like they're in a Bachelor show with Rodney Matthews or Andrew Spencer. They want a Bachelor Con. Fans of this show, take it from me as one of them, I want to be able to go for a weekend or a Saturday afternoon or Sunday or whatever. I'll fly to fucking Scottsdale. I don't give a shit. I'll go somewhere for it if that event is fucking cool. If it has a bunch of different bachelors there, if I can watch them do like a live episode of Clickbait.
If we can have people sign our Alex Michelle poster.
I'm not even going that far. Yeah, people, not him, just somebody, an Alex Michelle impersonator.
Whoever's there. Yeah. Whoever's there from the show.
I'm just saying that like there is massive fan interest in our beloved game. And I think what fans want, I know what I want as a fan, is the ability to go to a convention that is all about the show, the history of the show. I want to see different bachelors and bachelorettes from other seasons there signing autographs. Let me take pictures with them. Let me see them put on a Bachelor Happy Hour live on a stage in front of me. Let me just watch that in the audience. Let me see clips from old seasons playing in a room somewhere. Like, these are the things that they should be doing.
Dark Seasons dungeon. You have to leave your phone at the door to watch the Dark Seasons in the dungeon.
Fine. Yeah. Great. I'll do it. What I don't want to see is them pulling 12 random people out of the audience to go through these like stupid fucking like approximations of what it would be like to be in the show.
Yeah. We want an event where there is a paid Alex Michelle impersonator that we can take pictures with.
I would do that. But I'm hopeful that in the future, they're going to get their shit together and there will be some kind of a Bachelor Con, some kind of actual fan service for this show. Because as it stands now, the show treats fans like shit. Even in how they canceled it. Again, just a fucking smiling image of these three players and it just says canceled. No explanation, nothing. Fuck you very much.
Yeah. And it said no news of further shows.
Well, because I don't think they're going to do them. I think this is fucking done forever. I think the last Bachelor Live was whatever it was, 2 years ago. We'll see. Let's move on, however. Our sixth item on the list of top 10.
Hopefully I'll move on from it emotionally.
Oh, fuck. You never got to see it ever. Mm-mm. Fuck. It was worth seeing.
Damn you, COVID.
It was worth experiencing.
One of your biggest.
Yeah. One of the worst COVID tragedies.
Well, I feel like I was there from the video I watched of you and Dark Seeker at it.
Well, glad to be of service.
Did a very good explanation, I think.
Yeah, we tried.
But I didn't live it.
Well, someone who did live something is related to our number six item on this list. The treatment of sex this season was beyond bizarre. Sex Week was, in my opinion, one of the most clumsily produced and edited episodes of the entire season. They rearranged things. They forced Zach Shawcross to talk about having had sex with Gabby. They forced Zach Shawcross into this weird celibacy proclamation that he then breaks. Jesse Palmer is making fun of him for calling it Sex Week once, but they used that phrase 100 times. They made a woman fucking wear a t-shirt that read it in the Women Tell All. It was just very bizarre. And again, I mean, we talked about this in our recap and I believe maybe even on Twibbon last week, but this show started out in season one as a sex positive show. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think a lot of people think it's always been this kind of puritanical view of it. It has not. In those early seasons, people were having sex with each other. They were talking about their what they like to do sexually. It was a much more open and sex positive show back in the day. Granted, that came with some other shit like the boob zone and you know what have you. But
yeah, I mean, there's still been a weird purity culture around it, and it made up its own rules where you can only do it in the fantasy suites. And then people freaked out when Caitlin did it with one guy, I can't remember who, and it was before Fantasy Suites Week.
Oh my God. You can't remember who. Yes, you can. And you do. His name was Nick Viala, the greatest player of all time.
Next.
But there has been this thing in the modern seasons. You know, Madison Pruitt's sex ultimatum in season 24. There's usually always somebody playing a PVC. Ashley Iaconetti played one of the personal virginity cards. Sorry.
Heather Martin, never been kissed.
There's always some kind of element of that now. And it was around early. I mean, I remember Trista Sutter. She, on season one, was, I believe, an orgasm virgin, right?
Isn't Sutter the name of the husband? Wasn't she then Trista Rain?
I don't remember. Now I'm all confused, but...
I don't remember. Now I'm... she played a never orgasm during intercourse PVC.
Yeah. So it was like there a little bit. But then again, on the flip side, the first ring winner, Amanda Marsh, played the exact opposite, talking about all of the mm-hmm. different kinds of things she liked to do while she had sex. They had their fantasy suite had a thing called Sex in the Sheets, where they ordered rubber sheets for their bed and put ice cream all over each other and took Polaroids of the event, which were shown on the show. So it hasn't always been like this. And when they try to lock the fucking clamps down on it, and have him issue these proclamations. And now there's even beyond the rule of just, you can only have sex during Fantasy Suites Week. There's now this other weird rule that's like, well, I'm not even going to do that. Oh, but shit, I did it this time. And now who do I have to tell about it? And it's all of this shit that like season 26 had it too with the Clayton Eckerd Rose Ceremony from Hell, where he has to tell whoever, however many players that he's been intimate with them. And it's this culture that I think they have really cultivated, these producers, of making the leads so fearful that how they're going to be edited is going to make them look like shit and they're going to get death threats for the next year of their life, et cetera, that they feel obligated to tell everything that happens always, and it always fucks them over. It makes it weirder.
You know, that's what you get from your second weirdo bachelor.
A fucking failed Goldini sex, anti-sex proclamation.
I don't understand. It's like they're attacking the idea of Fantasy Suites itself. And it's like, I mean, you could change it if you wanted it to be different.
Exactly.
You're the ones who are saying this is sex week and putting, oh my God, I think they've gotten rid of the panic attack room, but putting all three of the final contestants in one hotel suite. And also, sex is pretty normal. I know I'm kind of a radical. Mm-hmm. But it's a normal part of relationships, and the treatment of it like this disgusting thing, like, oh, only adults do, like we're children or something, is very bizarre.
Yeah. And also like how they do this weird thing on this show where they're like, oh, look at Zach Shallcross in the shower. He's a piece of fucking meat. Look at what a sexy, hunky guy he is. But then it's like, now they can't have sex. And because you had sex, it has to be a beautiful moment. It couldn't be anything about like physical lust or anything like that. But look at him in the shower. On Sex Week, they have him in the fucking shower 100 times. They can't have both. And I think that the show, like, at least in terms of the ideology of what, in quotes, Sex Week or Fantasy Suites Week is, it loses something. When you have these two conflicting ideas of like, look how fucking sexy he is. You did what? You had sex? I can't believe this.
Yes.
Like it weakens both positions and just makes it stupid. You can very quickly see through the whole facade of like what they're even trying to do as producers. They need to get on a different page with this, I feel like. It just really... There was a little bit of, I think, momentum going into Fantasy Suites Week.
It feels 1800s.
Totally. Totally. It's just not contemporary. Speaking of not contemporary, let's move on to the number five item on our list here. Social media still villainized. We were so fucking enthusiastic at the beginning of the season when we saw Victoria Jameson, who has almost a million TikTok followers, got cast in the season, and Christina Mandrell, who was literally a content creator.
Born to be the Bachelorette.
But her job, too, was content creator, like in her chyrons, you know? I was like, fuck, okay, this is it. This is the season. They're turning the corner. They did that dumb fucking America's Fimp Bros thing, but at least they did something with social media. I was so hopeful. And then what happens? You saw what happened.
You're putting me back in a moment that I don't really wish to relive, which is where I saw okay. Christina Mandrell, and I was like, she's going to save the show
yeah.
as the next Bachelorette. And then they just didn't protect her and just...
Didn't protect her?
Villainized.
They fucked her over hardcore.
Yes.
They created a villain edit out of...
But they should have protected her.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's another thing that's not even on this list, like not protecting the players. That just kind of happens every season now.
You're Emily Maynard of 2023.
Exactly.
Hello. Who makes jokes.
I still don't understand, like, why you cast Mandrell, like, whatever. Mandrell had some missteps. She said some things that can be used against her. Not that they were even true. We know that thing with Brianna where Brianna's like, she said she hated me. We saw the footage. Clearly, it was like a joke. She didn't actually mean that. But it's on camera. And so now they can use it. Victoria Jameson, I really don't get that one. They cast somebody who has a million fucking TikTok followers in their show and then disappear her from the show. What? They didn't even make her a villain. They just fucking eliminated her presence.
Well, she was on that group date that they cut out.
That's what I'm saying.
With Uncle whatever.
Patrick Warburton. Yeah.
Patrick Warburton.
That group date was a, they had to do puppets. They played with puppets and shit. I'm sure it was funny. I'm sure it was great. I'm sure Victoria Jameson had some great fucking plays. We'll never get to see it. And I don't understand it.
They cut that. They cut Katie's morning portion of the fantasy suites. They feel like cuts to me. I want to be whole.
Like I said at the beginning of this episode.
Make us whole.
We are next week going to be talking about how to fix the franchise, how to make us whole. And please tune in for that. Because I truly think our strategies are exactly what needs to happen to put this show back on track, to have it become the dominant dating game again, because it's not now. And we're going to get to that in a minute here in our list.
We basically did our podcast before the podcast and decided that we need to save the show. And so we're doing the rebrand episode next week.
Somebody has to, because I mean, I don't want to get too ahead of ourselves where we are on this list, but the people they got running this shit now, ain't it. This ain't fucking it. And I know what it is. And we're going to tell you next week.
I've been to the future.
I have. I've seen the future. That much I can tell you. Whether they will come with me into this future or not, I don't know. But they should if they know what's good for them.
Okay, all of Bachelor Nation should get cryogenically frozen and we wake up and make a new season once we have new technology.
You don't even need new technology. You just need new people using currently available technology. at any rate, I just want to put a point on this thing about social media. This is something that we have been talking about literally since we started doing this podcast, the importance of it, how it integrates with reality television, how they are kind of one and the same. They are a hand in a glove in a hand, whatever the fucking phrase is. And the show still cannot get on board with that. Everything from villainizing Christina Mandrell, disappearing Victoria Jameson, all the shit that we've seen over the course of Paradise with Brandon Marias and Piper James, villainizing anybody who even mentions the word Instagram, Anastasia this season, same thing, the 50K yeah. Instagram followers, you're an immediate villain now, fuck you. It's just a gross misunderstanding of what social media means to your show. You want the audience following all of your players, interacting with everything you do in social media so that they then have a better reason to watch the show. If you don't have an audience who is constantly engaged with your show when it's not on TV through social media, they will be less likely to watch your show. It is that simple. I don't get why they can't understand this.
I don't know. Maybe it was all the one bad apple and we'll see them change their ways after 2023.
You think that Fleiss was stopping them from using social media?
I don't know.
I don't think so. Nonetheless.
Yeah, he's always tweeting. he was the one who said they had to use Twitter, I bet. Yeah, we'll do the poll on Twitter. Yeah, that's where the kids are. We'll get Gen Z this way.
Right. Okay. Moving on.
Speaking of engaged fan bases, our number four top takeaway from this season is that we had the rise of the Netflix reality dating formats with Perfect Match and Love is Blind season four during this season. How will Bachelor compete?
Again, tune in next week and I'll tell you exactly how they can not only compete, but destroy Netflix. Like I see what The Bachelor could be now very clearly, and it would put Netflix shows to shame if they do what we're saying to do next week. But right now, the world we're living in is they're not doing that. They're presenting the same tired format in the face of what Netflix is doing. These are shows that show you who the players are. They give you the footage of players being funny, having conversations about abortion, all kinds of shit that you're just never going to see in The Bachelor. In The Bachelor, you essentially have to wait until these players come out of the show and then go on podcasts to get any idea about who they might really be. And so then it asks you to do this extra step. It's like, I've watched the show, all episodes of it this season. I have literally no idea who any of the players are as people. I have none.
Yeah.
If I want to, I got to watch a fucking podcast or listen to a podcast or see some of their YouTube videos or some shit like that. And it's like, that's bad reality show. It's bad producing.
Yeah. Facts I can name about Charity. The next Bachelorette, who theoretically should have been getting some sort of edit to show us who this person is and want to follow that season. I know she has a brother who's playful.
Same.
I know she is Southern. She's got a beautiful tear play in her repertoire.
Yep.
What's her job?
I feel like I know more about her brother's personality. I don't know. I mean, they did tell us her job, but I have no idea.
Have you ever experienced a dry, itchy scalp or ever wondered why your color isn't lasting as long as your hairdresser promised? Well, unfiltered, mineral-filled water could be the reason why. Did you know hard water is a leading cause of damaged hair and dry, irritated skin? And that about 85% of the United States uses hard water filled with dissolved minerals and added chlorine. That's where Canopy's new filtered shower head comes in.
Known for their beauty hacks and reimagined humidifier, Canopy is dermatologist recommended. This unique three-stage filtration system greatly reduces contaminants and odors in your shower water. Best of all, the Canopy filtered shower head is hassle-free, installation's a breeze, and its unique quick-release filter replacement feature allows for seamless filter replacement. Go to canopy.co to save $25 on your Canopy filtered shower head purchase today with Canopy's hassle-free filter subscription. Even better, Gore listeners can use our code ROSES at checkout to save an additional 10% off your Canopy purchase. Hurry, your hair and skin will thank you.
Support for today's episode comes from OneSkin. If you have sensitive skin, you're going to want to hear about OneSkin's scientifically proven topical supplements. This is face, eye, body, shield, and it can all be used with any of their other products, which are free from over 1,500 chemicals and preservatives that can make skin red, irritated, or itchy. Their products are safe for sensitive skin. It's just one of the reasons they've earned the Skin Safe seal of approval.
You got to keep that skin glowing if you want to be keeping up the level of face play that I've got going on. And OneSkin was founded by an all-woman team of scientists. Their products are backed by extensive lab and clinical data to validate their efficacy and safety on all skin types. Their topical supplements are the easiest way to keep your skin healthy and hydrated without the harsh ingredients or irritation found in other skincare products often. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code ROSES at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code ROSES. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support Gore and tell them that we sent you. Clues. Underwear drawers.
They're not organized. They're like the Wild West, the final frontier of wardrobes. And there's no rhyme or reason to them. You got ones that are super old, different brands, etc. You don't know what to expect. But now I have felt the buttery soft comfort of MeUndies. And now I want to replace the whole drawer with MeUndies because those are my now go-to. I'm currently wearing their long sleeve shirt and my, which is not what this ad is about, but I am also wearing the super soft, sustainable modal fabric thong with no rollback waistband. You want that. You don't want it to be rolling. You don't want it to be showing. And I'm hooked. I don't want to wear anything else. It's all got to go now.
Well, this ad actually is kind of about that, Pace Case. Everybody knows MeUndies makes great underwear. It's in the name, MeUndies. But it's not just about underwear. You can explore the lounge collection featuring comfy joggers, hoodies, onesies, and a whole bunch more. And their Move Me activewear collection is the softest activewear on the market. There's no doubt about it. Right now, you can get 20% off your first order plus free shipping at MeUndies.com/roses. That's MeUndies.com/roses for 20% off plus free shipping. MeUndies, comfort from the outside in.
But I do feel like I know more about her brother in terms of his personality. He seems very funny and fun-loving. I got that out of the five-second little teaser they showed of us with him putting on the skies. It's just, when you look at these Netflix shows, again, two of them came out in the span of this one season of Bachelor. It's just night and day. It's so much more contemporary. I'm not even saying they protect their players.
The ITMs are slick.
I'm not saying that they protect their players in a way The Bachelor doesn't, but they at least allow the players to play. They allow the players to do what they're going to do, be who they are, and they cut a show around those players' strengths. Even if the player is a villain, like I would say Irina is that on the current season of Love is Blind, they still make her entertaining. You still want her to come on the screen. You like can't wait to see what she's going to do next.
Yeah. You want her to join the... I don't want to give spoilers, but...
They cut their players to be entertaining. It seems like with the Netflix shows, their primary goal is to make an entertaining program. With The Bachelor, it seems like the primary goal is to destroy people psychologically and show the audience as many moments of that as you can. It's they have lost sight of what makes the show entertaining. They believe it's, in quotes, drama, which to them translates to emotional distress. That's not what we want to see as an audience. And I do think they've lost their way. And Netflix is like picking up the fucking ball. They're like, we get it.
It's not relatable, you know? Like,
yeah.
Netflix is way more diverse in race, in body type, etc. And that's pretty glaring when you watch that. And then you cut back to this and it's like, this group photo of Zach Shallcross and the women could have been taken in 2002.
Yes. I mean, that exact same style of photo is taken every season. And I get tradition.
Yeah.
I get the need for ceremony, for ritual. I understand all of that. Take that same photo, present it slightly differently. You don't need to have The Bachelor standing in the middle of them, looking at a fucking camera that's slightly above head level of all of them. You don't need that. Do it from a low angle, over on the left. Have him looking kind of coyly into the camera like, yep, I get to date them all.
Like, what's this show about?
Put some fucking personality in it. This is essentially a fucking mugshot, a group mugshot of everybody who is terrified. Their smiles are fucking terrified. All of them, when this photo is taken, are like, shit, what's about to happen to me? I hope I don't get a villain edit. You don't have like, there's no joy in the player base anymore because they're terrified of the producers. And you don't get that in Netflix. You just don't get it. And I think that's also because of the environment. Netflix puts them up in like nice places. They don't make them fucking like their Perfect Match show. They put them in a fucking mansion.
You want to be on the show.
Yeah. It's like the vacation of going on a Netflix show is fun. The vacation of going on Bachelor is torture. yes, you have to quit your job and we're not going to pay you. You have to buy all your own clothes. You have to sleep in bunk beds. You get no fucking sleep. If you're going on Paradise, I mean, it's hell on earth. They make that part of the show. They're like, look how fucking bad the living conditions are. Ha, ha, ha. They make jokes of it. Andrew Spencer had a fucking python in his room.
The only people who go in the sex room are just farting in it.
Exactly. They don't get it.
I'm also concurrently watching Love Island, and there's players on that who are saying, like, I wish I could stay here forever. No one ever is saying that on the Bachelor franchise.
Yeah. They need to make appearances on The Bachelor something that people want to do, because now anybody who's thinking about, oh, maybe I'll apply for The Bachelor, they're also thinking about, no, maybe I'll apply to Love is Blind, The Circle, The Mole, Married at First Sight, any of those fucking Netflix shows. There's a whole slew of them, and you have a much higher probability of getting a big Instagram following out of it, because they don't shit on Instagram. They don't shit on social media. They're down with it.
And perhaps a less intense fan base as well, who are like trying to work out these moral conundrums.
Right.
Watching.
Yeah. The biggest villain in the Netflix reality franchise has the most followers.
Mm-hmm.
Francesca Ferrago, 5.8 million.
I mean, well, she's a once in a generation player. She's just unreal.
Great. But I still think that requires the producers to present her in a certain way.
Yeah.
You can be a great player, and if the producers decide, fuck you, you're done, you're done. They don't decide that.
Oh my God. They'd probably make her go home week two on Bachelor. Be like, oh, you just said I hate you, JK.
Exactly.
You're home. You go home.
Yes. They would not know how to present her. I agree.
Oh, you FaceTimed someone before you left. You go home.
Moving on. Our third most important thing. We're getting down to the top three now. Third most important thing that happened this season, of course, is Bookwatch. We now know Gabby was caught reading How to Win the Bachelor in the mansion before they left to go on the travel leg, the domestic travel leg of this season. And the producers have done something strange with it. They disappeared it. They enforced a rule that none of the other players could talk about it. And they also did not punish her for it. So this to me proves that they had already scripted a deep run for Gabby through this entire season, and they were not going to let that be deterred. So something that, like, had a lesser player been caught with the book, or a player that they didn't have this deep run already designed for, maybe it would have been used to villainize them in some way. But here they've completely disappeared even the event itself, the existence of this happening. They have rewritten the reality of it.
Do you think if a lower ranked player had found it, it would have been a different story and they might have used it?
Yes, I do.
Well, I'm still hoping. I'm still hoping we'll see the book.
But maybe not, too. Because maybe it becomes a thing. I think the story eventually will come out. I don't know how or when or why, but I think eventually it will come out. I think eventually maybe Gabby would talk about it, or one of the other players or something on a podcast. I don't know. But I, you know, you asked that question, if a lesser player had found it, would it have been used? I don't know, honestly. Because, like, what is the scenario? Is it just one person has found it? Have multiple people found it? Because if she was just one of a few players who found it and they had a deep run for her, they can't accuse the other players of it, because that would come back to her.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
If only a lesser player had found it, maybe they would have used it as a plot point. I don't think they ever would have said the name of the book.
Like Ryan Folders.
Yeah. But the Ryan Fox you're talking about on Michelle Young's season. But I also think that it's dangerous territory for them to even admit this book exists.
Yeah.
Or that a book like this exists. And so I think potentially they will never, ever mention it.
Yeah. They don't want people reading it, being prepared, going into the game. That ruins their whole thing.
Or does it? Because it gave them potentially Gabby. She was reading the book. Look at the season she turned in.
Right.
You tell me.
An unreal season. Like,
I think you want everybody reading the book, producers. It's we're helping you here. You know, we say all this shit about what's bad about the season and all this. It's not because we hate this show. I want to make that very clear. I fucking love The Bachelor.
We're obsessed with the show.
I want it to be good again. This is, it's hard to watch it now. And I think a lot of people have the same sentiment. You see what they're putting on TV, And it's like, you know how much better it could be. You know how much better it has been not that long ago. But that the current producer class is just like not getting it. And all these things we're saying are like, they're meant to be constructive.
And we're having a racism scandal every other season.
Well, do you want to move on to number two?
Speaking of racism scandals every other season, our number two top takeaway. I mean, it's in a lot of our takeaway episodes, unfortunately. And again, another thing that makes it hard to be a longtime viewer. You're seeing this, all this shit come out about Fleiss. Well, racism in the franchise is still a problem. Two main areas of this. We're talking Fleiss. We're talking Greer Blitzer. Fleiss getting fired for racism and all sorts of other horrible things that he has said.
Yeah, misogynistic, just discriminatory fucking... Oh.
Saying moo to other like players he didn't determine were the correct size. It's hard to take all that in. And he's been fired. So is this going to change the show at all?
I don't know. I will say this with regard to the two big racism scandals this season were the Greer Blitzer one and obviously Fleiss. So the Blitzer handling of this racism scandal, they did seemingly learn a lesson from Eric Schwer in season 19, who, as I'm sure all of us know at this point, a photo surfaced of him toward the end of Bachelorette 19, of him in blackface in a high school yearbook. That came out, but he was Gabby Wendy's ring winner. And so at the After the Final Rose, they just ignored it. They did not discuss it at all.
Disappeared it.
And there was a lot of outrage for that.
And Michelle Young walked out of the tape After the Final Rose taping.
Walked out, and she had a very interesting interview with Two Black Girls, One Rose. We had a clip from that in our most recent Digging Deeper. If you haven't heard it, go check that out. But the idea that they could completely ignore it in season 19, and now they've done this. They didn't ignore it this time. They put it front and center. They forced Greer Blitzer onto a hot seat. She did this apology.
They brought in a racism counselor.
Well, I think she's like a professor, like an expert on it and whatever. She's in the audience. They even had Dark Lord Palmer say, I forget how he said it exactly. It was like, we haven't handled serious issues well in the past. He doesn't ever say racism. He doesn't actually say what it is.
But it's still a lot.
It's some formal acknowledgement. Like the producers are writing that script for him. This has been decided by ABC as well. This is how we have to handle it. So they're at least taking, even though it's like propagandistic,
the barest bones.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
The the barest bones accountability for the history of racism in the franchise. And I mean, other than maybe the leads, it doesn't really seem like Fleiss has that much to do with the show now. I'm very curious if that will have any change we can even notice.
I agree. And this to me is like, how different is this than Chris Harrison getting fired? It's like they keep taking these people that are kind of like the mouthpiece or the identity of the show and be like, well, we found the racist culprit.
Yep. Oh, there's the one.
And then it's like, oh, no, wait, though. This next season also had somebody who's doing blackface apologist shit on Instagram. Fuck. I thought we got rid of Chris Harrison. Get rid of Mike Fleiss. He said racist shit. Okay, he's gone. But it's like, he didn't cast Greer Blitzer on this season. That's the casting department. They did this. I don't know if it was purposeful. I know in the past.
It turns out he's gotten Greer on the show. He's gotten Lee Geared on the show. Victoria Fuller. They're all his babies.
They're all going to barbecues on the weekends and shit together, flying their MAGA flags. I think that personally, I don't think it's going to make much of a difference because you still have, I mean, it may make a difference in like, again, the lead selection. I don't know how involved he was with Charity's lead selection. I would assume maybe that was even one of the sticking points about why he got fired as they were doing these investigations into these allegations that he's saying racist shit. Maybe he was like very against Charity or something. I don't know. This is conjecture, but I don't think it's going to make a huge difference because like you're saying, he hasn't really been involved in the day-to-day nuts and bolts of how this show gets made in a long time.
And the lead selection has very little to do with how the show turns out.
Right. It's more about in terms of like trying to avoid these racism scandals. And I feel for the casting producers to some degree.
Unless you can get Tyler Cameron.
Unless Tyler Cameron.
That's a game. That's a world changer.
But like, how can the producers effectively limit or stop players from coming into the game who have some racist shit in their past that may or may not be online or in a yearbook? It's like, you know, we've talked about what do you do? Hire a private investigator. Is that going to be enough? And then is that like, in terms of time, can that even work? How long does a private investigator need to go through 30 people's fucking entire background history to make sure there's not a some kind of racist shit in the background? I don't know.
Well, they've missed some doozies.
Yes.
One of them recently, I guess we'll get to in Twibbon. Dark news.
But also, like, is it the culture of the show? Does it attract a certain type of player that, like, a Netflix show doesn't? I don't know.
Well, we have a lot of casting ideas for our rebrand episode, but now we've got to get to our number one top takeaway.
Wait, though. I want to talk about one more thing. Just one more thing about Fleiss.
Remember when he subtweeted you?
No.
I keep reminding you of this.
Did he really do that?
Well, he tweeted at Gray Sand. Like something about making fun of Bad Judge.
Oh, yeah.
The show we met on.
Yes, I do remember that. Yes, I do. He was like, this coming from a person who had a show up for one season on NBC or something like that. I remember that.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully he won't be subtweeting us anymore. But I do want to just mention like the importance of this cannot be understated that he is fired from the franchise. This is the creator of the franchise who has been the lead creative voice in it since the beginning. Like we're saying, that kind of has tapered off over the last maybe decade or so. But
there tends to be a top-down effect in shows that I've worked on in terms of setting the cultural dynamic, though.
For sure. So I think it will have some impact. And again, this is the fucking guy who created it all. If Chris Harrison was the face of it, this is the brain of it. And that's gone now. So
face and what do you have without your face and brain?
I don't know. Not much.
Skeleton.
Yeah, who's the skeleton of the Bachelor? I don't know. But, you know, I do think that this does open it up. It opens it up for the possibility of massive change. Whether that's going to happen or not, now it's up to the ABC executives, the Warner Brothers executives, and that top tier producers. We're talking about Bennett. We're talking about Louis. We're talking about those guys. Are they going to change this shit? We don't know. All right, let's move on.
We shall see.
We've come to the final element here, the final thing on our list. Please, Pace Case, do the honors.
Our number one most important takeaway from Zach Shallcross's season, and what we think kind of encompasses all the rest of this is that it was the season of Goldini. The producers tried their very hardest to make this another Goldini season, aka Sean Lowe, aka the only bachelor who got married to his ring winner. And they completely failed, in my opinion. They don't understand that in order to move forward, compete with these Netflix shows, you can't relive the past. As the Yellow Jackets theme song goes, no return, no return.
Interesting.
You can't go back.
I completely agree. And it had kind of like a negative effect, I think, that they maybe didn't anticipate, which is it diminishes, it dilutes season 17. That was Sean Lowe's season. By carting him back out and making him sign off on Zach Shawcross, who is not a liked bachelor in the nation. He was perceived as boring. The season was kind of boring. He had his missteps during sex week. Everybody villainized him for that. Even the show did to some degree. It now kind of like has this taint on Sean Lowe. He was a perfect bachelor up to this point. Now he's fucking co-signed Zach Shawcross. If that relationship falls apart...
He gave Zach Shawcross his worst idea ever.
That too. But if Shawcross and Bigger fall apart, the anointing that Sean Lowe has given to Shawcross and to this season is worthless. And so now even that can't be used again. If you bring Sean Lowe out again to like give advice to a bachelor, who gives a fuck? If they don't get married... Sean Lowe is now tainted. He can never be like a good Council of Crowns again.
I don't think they're going to bring him back as Council of Crowns for a while. It just juxtaposed their seasons too much, too. And I was like, God, that was such a great season.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have a Tierra this season? No. Do we have a Catherine? Well, time will tell.
It's also like speaks to the idea of how they don't get that you want a younger audience to start getting involved in your show. So what you don't do is bring a guy out from 10 years ago. Most people that I talk to via DM and what have you, I always am curious about like, what was your first season? Most of them are season 20 at this point. That is like a big entry point for a lot of people. That was Ben Higgins of the current audience. I mean, that's a huge entry point. They don't even know who the fuck Sean Lowe is. They don't give a fuck if he's eating a sandwich while Zach Shawcross is fucking taking a shower or whatever. They don't care. You know what I mean?
They also had Sean Lowe make fun of him the whole after the final rose, too.
That too, yeah. But it's like part and parcel with their misunderstanding of how to market the show when they do like graduate posters for Claire Crawley or Thelma and Louise posters for Rachel Recchia and Gabby Windey. These are movies that the current audience has not seen, does not care about, does not know the imagery, the tropes from it. So when you're using it to market your season, it falls flat. The same now is true with Sean Lowe. He is too old in the franchise's history to appeal to a new audience. You must move forward. If you want to do that type of shit, the people you bring back are Hannah Brown and Tyler Cameron. That is it. Those are the two.
Yes.
And they're not doing that.
No one else is going to move the needle who's from the past.
Exactly.
I don't even think Peter Krause could at this point.
Maybe
a few needles.
I agree with you. Unfortunately, I have to agree.
I mean, look, try it out.
Try it out. Okay, I will. But that wraps up our top 10. Just missing the chart was this. No, at number 13, this was the first season with a fucking weirdo. We mentioned that up top. Number 12 is that we are in an era that needs a necessary rebrand. And next week, we're going to be talking about that rebrand in explicit detail. Again, this is going to be not just, they need to make it funnier. They need to make it better. We are going to give you specific ideas for exactly how to put this show back on top. And we will also mention in that episode exactly what we will expect in a contract as producers of The Bachelor if you use our ideas. And also just missing the top 10 was this was the season of Jorge Marinos.
I have a big rider.
Do you?
Big.
Nice. I can't wait to hear your rider. Maybe we'll have to put that together for that episode too, what our riders will be. But again, just missing the top 10 was this was the season of Jorge Moreno bystanders. There were so many good ones. My God.
Yeah.
And we're going to get to our bystanders of the season here. But That to me was the biggest thing that the producers did correctly. These Jorge Morenos were fucking amazing. God damn, I love them. And
it was hard to pick this one.
I agree. I had to go back and look through all the Jorge Morenos, like, Jesus Christ, there were so many. But let's move on. That wraps up our top 10 list. Thank you for sticking around to the end. And now we're going to give out our season awards. Where shall we begin? You want to begin with the minutia?
Yeah, that seems like the best place to start.
Let's do it.
You and I, in some episode, were discussing, I guess, talking about going to New York again. Okay. To do a book signing or some sort of travel. And you said, I don't want to do a mini move. I don't like them. And this was my minutia of the season.
The mini moves?
The mini moves. Yes. I literally was like,
okay.
I feel like you and I have spent hundreds of millions of hours speaking to each other. I feel like I know most of your quirks.
Okay.
A lot of, you know, your attitudes about everything, I would say. And I guess I knew you didn't really travel very much, but the description of it as a mini move and that you don't like having to bring all your stuff with you and that you've only had one vacation ever because you didn't have a hotel room was just one of the somehow still shocked me and was one of my favorite moments maybe this season.
All right. Happy to be of service. This season, the shitty hoojus were my minutia of the season. I love the subsport of hoojus, as I'm sure most people know. Love to break them down, love to review them, love to rate them Olympic style. This season, they were presented poorly, they were executed poorly, and it truly seems like the show, to me, doesn't give a fuck about them. It's this holdover from a prior era. The producers still make players do them. They just don't give a fuck. The producers don't care. The players don't care. And as a result, we, the audience, don't care. Got to get the minutia game or the hooju game up this next season.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move on to the creatures of the season. What do you got?
There was only one answer in my book. Of course, the Royal Bloodline Corgis were my... creature of the season. I loved those pups. They were, you know, the fanciest dog you could imagine, the queen's dogs, and I loved them. And they had cute little bow ties, and I thought of them a lot.
Oh,
and also I liked the bloodline conversation.
That makes a lot of sense.
Maybe that's my minutia of the season.
Roman Reigns just won WrestleMania and upheld the bloodline, just to let you know. Yeah.
Good for the bloodline.
Indeed.
What's your creature of the season?
The corgis were beautiful. Minutia alarm on myself. The sex week monkeys were my... creature of the season. Love me some monkeys. Love me some monkeys during sex week. Love me some sex week monkeys that almost attacked Katie Bigger as she walked the path of pain. Thank you, monkeys. Let's move on.
They were cute. They were rascals.
They were indeed. Who was your Jorge Moreno bystander of the season?
The woman who I believe was maybe the mother of the person sitting next to her who sat in the after the final rose audience and wore the Sex Week t-shirt was my Jorge Moreno bystander of the season. I loved her. She immediately came to mind when I thought of this, and to me, she really represented, you know, the nation. We're trying to go with whatever the producers are giving us, but you know, we're talking about Sex Week like in this very bizarre way. It just kind of encapsulated the season for me.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. This year, the bartender from London Week was my Jorge Moreno, bystander of the season. This woman was hilarious. She was doing, if you'll remember, teaching them British slang for things. And she even got a whole tag unto herself. I mean, there were a million great Jorge Morenos. And I agree with you, the Sex Week t-shirt lady, immortal at this point. Like, we'll never forget her. But I thought this...
There were the people who put... who raced with their wife's butts in their head. And there were bowler hats, the nudists. Look, I was going to put the bartender, but then I saw you put it and I was like, eh.
Oh, all right. Well, she got my Jorge Moreno. Congratulations.
She's amazing.
Let's move on to our errors of the season. Who you got?
For his Goldini sanctioned Sex Week ultimatum, Zach's Shallcross got my error of the season.
That's rough when a lead gets your error. That's hard.
I feel like it really, I was like, what is the one play that I feel like really changed someone's fourth audience persona for the worse, the biggest? And I thought of this one.
Interesting.
I feel like he really got his villain edit Fantasy Suites week.
Yeah. Greer Blitzer comparing Zach Shawcross getting COVID to a sales report that she did once was my
error of the season.
End of her sales quarter, not just a report.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. I think she could have lasted a little bit longer. I don't know if she was going to make it to hometowns or whatever, but she gave him a reason in that moment. And he took that reason the very next week that she showed up after she was COVID negative. She went to his hotel room and he dumped her immediately. I think that started with this error.
Yeah. I feel like the error was getting COVID.
Well, I mean, yeah, but what can you do? She probably got it from him. Let's move on to our face play of the season. Who you got?
Katie Biggers, big puffed up cheeks, got by... face play of the season. When Zach Shallcross is telling her about Sex Week and she does a big puffer fish face. She had a lot of great face play. What was yours?
She actually did. Kat Carter's limo exit, growl and claw combo was my...
face play of the season.
Kat Carter was hands down the face player of the season. Nobody came close. She got eliminated early on in the season, which was a mistake, I think, by producers. But that, coming out of the limo with the cat growl, set up all of her face plays after that. She was doing a bunch during the Women Tell All. She was a fantastic face player. Looking very forward to her on sand. Let's move on. Now we are into the two final awards, the biggest ones of the season. What was your play of the season?
Gabby's chemistry play during Fantasy Suites week, getting Zach Shallcross to break his Goldini Sex Week ultimatum, was my play of the season.
Gabby's chemistry play in the second round of the playoffs that got Zach to break his Goldini vow of celibacy was also my
play of the season.
Never seen anything quite like this. You've got Goldini. You've got literally a god of The Bachelor saying unto his new Bachelor protege, don't have sex. She fucking beat a god. Incredible. And I think then this might have some impact on our next award. Who was your MVP of the season?
For my play of the season and really what she did all season through colorful narration, through second audience play, especially, Gabby was my MVP of the season. I do feel like in a traditional season, we would have seen her become the next lead from that strong victimization edit, strong fourth audience game, strong second audience game, and clearly strong the third audience since she got the footage of her reading the book removed from the show.
Exactly. For all of these reasons, Gabby was also my
MVP of the season.
Just fantastic, top to bottom. This was one of the best seasons we've ever seen turned in. Certainly one of the best runner-up seasons we've ever seen turned in. The fact that she read our book is just icing on the cake to me. I would have given her this MVP anyway. Really, really impressed with what she was able to do, especially in a weird season like this with Goldini giving the ultimatums and the producers still kind of like just extracting any personality out of all the players and removing it.
Yeah.
She was able to kind of inject some of that back in. It was almost like she was too good to even let them edit away who she was as a person. So,
yeah, she's shown through all the sanding down that they were doing.
But that is it. That wraps up our top 10 and our awards for the season. We thank you for joining us. And again, we'll be back this week with This Week of Bachelor Nation on Friday. But please join us next Tuesday for what I think is going to be one of the most important episodes we will ever do. We are literally going to tell the producers exactly how to save this franchise. These are not like general things. These are very specific, creative things to do to the format of the show, how it's presented, that we truly believe would resurrect this show in a way that it has never been resurrected. So please, we hope you'll join us for that.
At least bring it into the 21st century, whatever century we're in. 22nd.
You always give me shit for being from the 1900s and you don't even know what century it is now. This is abuse. All right.
This is abuse. The fucking cat claw wounds all up your arm are an abuse, and me saying the 1900s is abuse? What?
Skabulian loves me. That is not abuse. That's how he shows love. It's complicated. It's like Raven.
This is how I show love too.
I want to be loved in the Raven way, the Skabulian way.
You just make such a fun face when you're annoyed.
That's why you do it? To entertain yourself? All right, I'll accept that.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. It's part of it.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. But thanks everybody for joining us. We hope you will join us at the end of this week. And then again, for that all-important episode next Tuesday.
We also have a new Digging Deeper that came out on our Patreon this week as well. Patreon.com/Game of Roses.
And before we go, as always, what is that dwabat?
It has been 7,680 days without an Asian bachelor. Praise be Dark Lord Palmer.
Please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us, and then please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us, and then please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us, and then